API tail extensions. You have also the client object, which was cloned in, in between. You can also use this to perform some read operations like get. There's also fetch, which allows you to establish a reference, which is very typical in multiple custom resources defined in your essentially ecosystem, where you have to reference some config map, secret, or other resource. This fetch command is for fetching those resources immediately without any additional logic. Try it out. So for controller runtime, very easy to use as well. We have a type system, which allows us to define this sort of commonly known list and object type, pod list and pod object. They come in from core. So one of the benefits of Golang, obviously, you have imports, which automatically found by your project when you compile Golang. It suggests you the import for the object you want to use. And it's currently pretty good work in this regard. You can get, for example, what is this core V1 object automatically substituted for you, which is a great benefit in comparison to what have been in the past, because controller runtime is built on client Go framework, and you have essentially a DSL language to build the path to the object and construct it in terms of what you want to pass to the client. Unfortunately, nothing like this exists in Kubernetes, but what is happening there, it's built upon the K8S Open API framework, which uses open API generation code. For each Kubernetes release, all the core libraries are generating all the types with the same path, essentially, of the import, which you can use later, like this pod object displayed in the initial example. That's the open API generation code. So it's pretty good. Now coming to error handling, you want to go structure path or structure path. For controllers, there are some things which you want to define. For example, if you want to return one type of error or another type of error, very well recommended. This error framework allows you to derive those things automatically. And yeah, you can just map the error if you don't know this, or you can have this from stance, which automatically says to you what type of error it expects, so you can just question mark this out. And you have the error log message as well included in this, which is a big benefit in comparison to Golang when you have to always return an error, log something out, do something. This happy path or unhappy path deviations can be described by this specific structure and works pretty well in these occasions. But we can go even simpler. We can define anyhow and just say we want to document some things in this error scenario and imagine that we have some result which has also these log messages. When you have tracing, we can define this error type. I don't think it's actually very well visible here, but at the end of these markers, this allows you, whenever you have an error caught from this method, I'll put this to the log message through the log pipeline with this instrument command, which is very powerful, allows you to focus on the code, and this results in a very condensed, rich in logic code, which only focuses on things you want to do. So I believe, in my personal opinion, code written in Rust this way is much more readable than Golang when you have thousands of lines of code in multiple occasions. But performance, obviously we need to touch this topic. I'm not an expert. I'm writing Rust things in my spare time for fun. So I like clone, I like atomic reference counts, things which dump your performance, obviously, but it's difficult to get it wrong, essentially. The Rust type system forces you to build things the right way. Borrow checker is hard to avoid, which, by the way, is one of the problems which is often talked discussed in Rust comparisons. It's not much of a problem for those type of resources because we work through structures. We essentially write a state machine, we convert from one structure to another structure, moving the data out. So borrow checker never really happens to be a problem in these scenarios, in my experience. I never try to write big, normal stuff. Like, for example, you write something like cluster API in Rust. That's going to be definitely a difficult topic. But for small projects, CLI tools, I find nothing better than Kubernetes at this point. Container runtime, yeah, it's very well optimized if you know what you're doing. Advanced configurations are available. They have to be, basically, you have to go through the code to understand this. There is no documentation for that, unfortunately. But if you manage to do it right, it works similarly, if not better, for some examples. But, I mean, nothing is perfect. One of the things which Kubernetes is missing, in my opinion, is caching implementation, or at least the one which we used in container runtime. By default, as I said, container runtime derives client Go and extends this implementation, and they use shared informs cache. So each client request which you issue essentially goes through the cache state first, which is reliquidated and populated during the time of the lifetime of the controller. So you don't really issue that many requests to the API server. Unlike with Kubernetes, when it comes to multiple client interactions, they always go to API server, which might be a problem, but might not, because you know, in the latest API server discussions, they're trying to implement server-side caching. And if you don't worry about network overhead, then you can still benefit from the cache and increase speed of these things. But controller runtime, yeah. Cache, we have optimized scenarios. Multiple things are available there, but it's difficult to configure this right. If you don't go like beyond quick start, you probably won't notice this, but anything more than that requires lots of things which you have to tinker out. And Kubernetes actually is very well built for not doing this in many occasions. Compiler will help you out to build your controller. So there's an example of a simple quick start controller which watches my custom resource and sets ownerships on the pods, expects them to be set to own the pod resource, and then reconciles our things on the change of these pod resources with ownership references. Same thing in Kubernetes. API for pod to custom resource, and you get the owns, stances, everything is very similar. As you can see, there's also a reconcile method, which is immediately bound to the resource itself, so it knows what type you're working with. The difference in Kubernetes that cache is only present in this scenario. So when you open a new controller API, you have a cache, which is like watch list in some scenarios, but definitely something which is populated by the open watches. And the resource you're getting, this my custom resource in this reconcile, is actually coming from cache. So if you don't want to do anything complex, just map something to some other resources or send some requests, this is pretty performant as well as doesn't have any overhead on the network. You can work with unstructured resources in container runtime, which is tricky. Not many people use it, but sometimes you want to do this, which is much easier to do in Kubernetes because you have dynamic object. And all those resources I'm talking about, they inherit the resource trait. So you have things like name, namespace of the object, resource version, labels as iterators, as lists, annotations. Nothing like this exists in controller runtime, and you cannot really expand on this, expecting this to be some sort of standard at this point, because people don't do this, unfortunately. While here you have all the opportunities to build your trait extensions, expand your traits on this specific definition. Not sure if I have enough time, but coming to essentially generation of CRDs, I'm going to talk about how it was used in one of the CLI tools I wrote. CRD generation, you see, you can create your own custom resource. Very easy to do with controller runtime, but this goes through kubuilder init. If you want to write something like this on your own, be prepared for multiple tinkering and issues with this approach, unknown dependencies, pulling the customized things. It's very difficult to get it right from the first try if you don't use this quick start. And if you deviate from this, prepare for always matching those annotations which have absolutely no documentation whatsoever. But it works. What has the Kubernetes for this is macros. One of those macros is custom resource. Everything you see here is compile time checked. You won't make a mistake that will lead to something compiled incorrectly and thus not working in your production code. Once it compiles, you have a CRD, and that is what you see here. So there are some expected string types, foo and bar. There is a custom resource spec and status. It's equivalent to the previous slide if you want to compare. All option types results in essentially pointer type, so it's not supposed to be there. And you can define some sort of rules on that, and also thread overrides on top, which allows you to rename those fields to the way you like. So it's typical in scenarios like this to have, I believe, camel-cased names of those variables. Same thing is achievable here, but Rust expects this to be underscore cased. So,
you have 1 more minute.
Yep. You can inherit resources. So as I talked about the trait definitions of resource, you can inherit some sort of base resource from the core library or anything you derive from other sources like custom resource you define on your own. For example, in here we have a config map imported, and I'm using this config map as a source for this more structured type I want to use. So when I call the API get on this CA config map, if it's not the one I expected to see with the certificate in it, it will error out on the server. And you'll see this error, so it's very easy to like exclude this non-heavy path scenarios. You can actually avoid having problems with Kubernetes and, you know, Rust new type pattern this way. If you want to use some external API, you can actually derive from external API, define only 2 to 3 fields like spec status from there, and then you have your own type, you can build trait implementations upon, etc. It's very easy to use. And I have an example of the project, which is automatically synchronizing the cluster API definitions from the CRDs. Okay.
Sorry, you're out of time. We need to get to the next talk.
Yeah. Anyway, feel free to go through the slides. They are quite interesting things. Thank you very much.